This is Bart Peterson, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This is Greg Gilchrist, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
This is Dan DeMarco, and you are listening to the FCPA Compliance Report on the Compliance Podcast Network.
In this episode, I visit with Piero Molinaro, Senior Managing Director at K2 Intelligence Fin, Head of Financial Crimes, Risk and Compliance for EMEA, and Joanne Taylor, Managing Director at K2 Intelligence Fin. We take a deep dive into the FinCEN papers. What are the FinCEN papers? What is the meaning of the release of these documents? How you can use these going forward in your financial crimes compliance program, and the positives from this release of information.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox back for another episode. And today I have with me Piero Molinaro, Senior Managing Director at K2 Fin, and Joanne Taylor, Managing Director at K2 Fin. And we are going to take up a topic that has greatly interested me, and that's the FinCEN paper. So first of all, Piero and Joanne, thanks so much for taking the time to visit with me today. I was wondering if you guys could detail your roles with K2 Intelligence Fin.
Sure. Perhaps I will start. So I head the financial crime risk and compliance practice for the EMEA region. And as such, I'm based out of the London office. We work extensively in a number of countries in Europe, but also in the Middle East and, in fact, in Africa quite a bit. With respect to regulatory matters and therefore anti-money laundering, sanctions and sanctions compliance, anti-bribery and corruption, as well as fraud prevention. And I'll let Jo introduce herself.
Thanks, Piero. So I'm an MD in the London office of K2, and in my role, I work on investigations across the space, particularly focused on anti-bribery and fraud. And I also work on the financial crime compliance advisory side with Piero.
So Piero, if maybe I could start with you on almost the basics. What are the FinCEN papers, and what is or was the significance of their release?
The case of the FinCEN files relates to more than 2,100 suspicious activity reports, or SARs, as we call them, which were filed by over 90 financial institutions with the United States Financial Crime Enforcement Network, and then have been leaked and become object of an investigative journalism effort by the same international consortium of investigative journalists that brought to us the Paradise and Panama Papers, as well as other media partners, quite a few, actually, over 188 countries. The documents were initially provided by BuzzFeed News, but the actual source of these documents has yet to be identified. Clearly, given the sensitivity of the information, this leak is quite unique. So the data made available on the website of the ICIJ contains information for $35 billion worth in transactions. And these transactions date between the year 2000 and 2017. These were transactions and behaviors that were flagged as suspicious. And what is very interesting in this case is the fact that on the same website, there's also an interactive map that one can use to navigate through this data, or at least as of today, a portion of this data. And it displays select cases with details about the originator and the beneficiary of the transactions. And the stated objective of illustrating and providing this information on that website and in this functionality is to illustrate how potentially dirty money flows from country to country around the world via U.S.-based banks. So it's very interesting in terms of what has been provided, and as well as the manner in which it has been provided, which is this functionality that allows you to drill down to the country to see the flows in specific banks and specific transactions involved. Since the leak, which is now about 15 days old, many stories have emerged detailing the information of the SARs, the suspicious activity reports involved. And there's been many articles that have come out. As now the focus, at least in my view, is on the banks involved in these transactions, the banks that actually reported the suspicious activity. But I do anticipate that the role of the supranational bodies like FATF and Egmont, as well as the governments of the countries involved and the enforcement entities of those countries will also become an important part of this discussion. If I may, I'll talk a little bit about the significance, because it really is, as I said, a unique incident. So the leak is very significant, in my view. By way of background, we're talking about financial institutions worldwide, which are obliged to report the suspicious activity they identify to the respective local authorities through the SARs. And certainly this is a part of the this important matter, but there's also the role played by the authorities, which are supposed to investigate or otherwise make use of the information that is reported to them. All of this reporting of suspicious activity and then investigating of it is required to happen confidentially and for good reason. This is a common regulatory requirement. The sharing of the reports, the information within the reports, or even the knowledge that a report has been filed may actually put at risk those reporting and can even potentially compromise or hinder in some way the authority's investigation of the underlying suspicious activity. And therefore, it puts at risk the determination of if and when and how the authorities need to intervene. So this is a very significant fact, the fact that they have been released and that evidence is available on the financial institutions that have reported these events. The FinCEN Files leak is really exceptional, and I would add unprecedented, even for a global news scoop such as this one. So this information, as I said, has always been considered and treated by compliance professionals. The reports flag the patterns for potential investigation by law enforcement, and I'd like to make this absolutely clear. They aren't necessarily indicative of criminal conduct or other wrongdoing. Rather, as per the name of this report, they reflect the compliance officer's suspicions. In other words, they're not supposed to be considered as hard evidence for signaling out, condemning, or making any judgment on the parties involved, at least in my view. And unfortunately, this is exactly what appears to have happened and to be going on at this time with the FinCEN file leaks. As I said, the focus at this time is on those who have, in fact, submitted these reports, which is what is required of them.
Joe, literally since this story broke, I've been saving up this question for you and maybe a couple of questions, because I really wanted to put to you, did this release of information hurt financial institutions? Did it hurt regulators? Did it hurt us, other stakeholders, the public? And really, I just wanted to get your views on how that may have shaken out.
Thanks, Tom. I think to take the financial institutions first, obviously we've got reputational risk issues due to the press articles Piero's referred to. And many of the banks have issued statements, but of course are not able to comment specifically on the SARs, which are the subject of the press articles. We've now got a risk for banks of class action lawsuits brought on behalf of investors who have suffered losses due to the fall in the bank's share price as a result of these leaks. But I actually think the impact on banks is probably something that will go on behind the scenes, in that banks will have lots of questions from their home regulator. So European banks will have home regulators who were not aware of the banks having filed some of these SARs with FinCEN. And so the banks will have questions from their home regulator about the SARs that are the subject of the press articles. And also the home regulator will, I think, be seeking reassurances that the firm's SAR framework is operating correctly and that the clients that have been the subject of SARs have been reviewed in accordance with requirements periodically and that their transactions are being monitored. So I think there will be a lot of pain for banks behind the scenes. And I also think banks will be having to revisit the SARs they filed with FinCEN to look at whether these controls have worked effectively, but also to look at whether that client relationship, if it's still ongoing, is still within the bank's risk appetite.
What about the regulators?
So with regulators, of course, FinCEN have said, look, this is a crime. It impacts national security. It's a really serious matter. And as Piero said, compromises potential law enforcement investigations and so on. I think, obviously, FinCEN have proposed reforms around the time of these leaks. And what we see in the UK is also that reforms were proposed around the time of the leaks, respect of Companies House, which is the UK Register of Companies. And what we're seeing here is that the changes contemplated are to help address fraud and money laundering risks. And basically to have better data integrity in terms of what's filed at Companies House. So I'd flag a couple of examples of the proposed change. So introducing compulsory identity verification for directors and people with significant control of companies and an obligation that firms which fall under the money laundering regulations here in the UK have to report discrepancies between that public register of companies and the information they hold on their own customers. These are all very positive reforms in my view.
So with some of the feedback by authorities, Piero, do you see the regulators using this release as really a communication or even an information point to move forward?
I certainly hope so. I think I've seen this event being taken as an opportunity to say that there's more to be done, that this is an indication that money laundering is really widespread to an extent that is perhaps even greater than sometimes we think. I think that on a positive note, Pete, in any way, banks have banks refrain from continuing to comply with these regulations to identify suspicious activity and to submit the SARs. But from certainly. To stay out of trouble, if you will, in relation to the risk of non-compliance. But I think more work needs to be done, and this work is really also very much on the regulatory and enforcement front. So from this perspective, we can say this is a great opportunity for all those involved with the process of assessing and then investigating and then prosecuting those involved in potentially suspicious and then when determined actual money laundering. And so I'm talking about the national governments and I'm talking about, again, the financial integrity, the financial investigative units of the various countries, as well as the prosecutors. They could really sort of use this as an opportunity to request additional resources for what is often seen as sort of the less effective part of the process, the actual assessment of these SARs and then the investigation. And in addition to asking for additional resources, coming up with new approaches to reporting on these and to making good use of the information in the aggregate that these SARs provide. In fact, one of the proposed amendments in the U.S. goes along this way. FinCEN is, in fact, saying that they will provide direction on the basis of the findings of the aggregate SARs that are filed in the U.S. Every 2 years. And this is one of the proposed amendments, so we'll see. But certainly that is the direction that the industry, in my view, would like to go. The more use, more feedback from these SARs, more use of these of the information in these SARs. What else? The clearly, I mean, as with any system, you know, the new challenges that will require new solutions and as I said, appropriate resourcing. But I expect that we will see perhaps more prescriptive guidance coming out of this, which might be a positive on aspects like what constitute a valuable SAR, and maybe differentiating more clearly what is expected, not just in terms of data fields, but in terms of the type of valuable information that authorities are seeking. And perhaps maybe even more proactiveness by the industry, you know, in terms of when they're required to freeze assets as opposed to just file SARs and continue to monitor the behavior. And I think these are all positives that may come out. And as I said, I expect some of this, in fact, most of what should come out to come out from the regulatory side and the government side.
Jill, if I could ask you, here in the United States, even with anti-bribery, anti-corruption compliance, there's actually an ongoing dialogue. There's an ongoing dialogue by people like you and me, service providers. There's an ongoing dialogue with the regulators in the United States, the form of the Department of Justice. There's an ongoing dialogue with companies, commercial corporations, financial institutions. Is that that ongoing dialogue also ongoing in the United Kingdom to really bring all of the stakeholders together, the financial institutions, the regulators, the people who work in this space like yourself, to see if we can move towards a more efficient or more effective system?
Well, there are examples of collaboration between the public and private sector. For example, there's a group called Gimlet where information is shared amongst the banks on a, believe, a Chatham House basis in order to inform intelligence gathering and in conjunction with law enforcement. But I think what I flag in this regard is a recent set of proposals from the Law Commission in the UK around reform of this regime. So following a consultation process, there was a report published which, to Piero's point, made some recommendations about perhaps more prescriptive guidance around SAR filing. Because one of the issues we have in the UK is that because the test it is quite a low bar for filing a SAR, and this means that a lot of companies end up filing multiple SARs because they take a very sort of defensive, conservative approach. And so the Law Commission recommended better guidance for the sector with a focus on the test for suspicion in particular. And also, again, to this point around the cross-sector approach, proposed an advisory board that would monitor the effectiveness of SAR reporting and advise on improvements which can be made. And then to Piero's other point around whether to freeze the account or not, another recommendation was that there should be a way in which banks can ring fence the suspected illicit funds, but then also continue to provide access to money which is seen as legitimate. And that's something which is welcomed by the financial institutions because it reduces litigation risk. So there are some good discussions, I think, happening in this space. And I think the positive we can take from this leak is that those discussions will come back into the spotlight, given all the competing of, you know, things going on in the world. Perhaps these reforms and the timetables will be reconsidered in light of this leak.
And if I could end with maybe a discussion of the following, I see this, the release of these papers, a couple of different ways. One is an opportunity for reform, and you both have talked about that. But I actually saw this, and taking a deep dive into it, that compliance functions in banks are doing their job. They may not do it perfect, but they're actually doing their job. And of course, the SARs that were released was over $2 billion in money laundering. But it showed to me that compliance teams, compliance solutions, and compliance personnel are all doing their job. I found that to be a huge positive. And I was wondering if I have too rosy an assessment or what you guys might think about that.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, and actually some of the banks have commented on this in their statement, the huge amount of resources that go into these types of functions within banks can't be underestimated. The need to, in some European jurisdictions, to file SARs within a matter of, a handful of days from alert through to SAR filing creates an enormous resource requirement on banks. So I do agree with you, on that, Tom.
Yeah, and to echo that, I recently wrote a commentary on the FinCEN files focusing exactly on that on the one hand, one can stop and say, okay, well, banks are involved in many transactions and in a number, quite a bit, if you look at what has been leaked of potentially suspicious transactions, or actually suspicious transactions. But you can't stop there. It also shows how much work is going on behind the scenes in so many countries, in so many financial institutions. And this is, in my view, a lot of great work by professionals who are putting in a lot of time and resources into coming up with, I want to say, at least good suggestions and valuable information that really needs to be looked at. And as I said before, I think it's a question of taking a closer look at the resources dedicated by the individual governments around the world, and also at the approach that is taken for SARs in general at a supranational level, because clearly we're looking at flows of money from country to country and the transactions that have been leaked, suspicious activity reports that have been leaked, are demonstrating that it's from one country to other countries and back. So it is really an international effort, and we have to take a top-down approach. And that's why I was mentioning FATF and Egmont, as well as the individual governments, especially with large financial systems like the UK and the US.
Well, Joe and Piero, unfortunately, we are near the end of our time, but I was wondering if our listeners wanted any more information on this topic, where could they go?
Thanks, Tom. Well, your listeners, they could visit our website, k2intelligence.com, or you can find us on LinkedIn or on Twitter. Thanks again.
So thank you all so much for taking the time to visit with me. And as more information comes out, I may ask to call upon you in the future to see if we can unpack what may hold for all of us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. It would be a pleasure.
Hello, everyone. This is Tom Fox. Thanks again for listening to this episode of the FCPA Compliance Report. I've linked to the K2 Intelligence Fin website and then two resources, a white paper and a client alert that they put out around the FinCEN paper. So check those out in the show notes. This presentation of the FCPA Compliance Report has been a part of the Compliance Podcast Network. This podcast is also a proud member of C-Suite Radio. Thanks so much for listening, and I look forward to visiting with you again soon.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.